welcome to Rewatchable episode 171 for Buffy the Vampire Slayer, season 4, episode 4, Fear Itself, and Angel season 1, episode 4, I Fall to Pieces. So, I'm obviously not Karen or Selena. I am Caitlin, and I am joined by both Brittany and Mitch. We are the Comic Con Rejects. Hello, everybody.
Comic Con.
I could have sworn you were Caitlin. Oh, you are Caitlin. There we go.
That would be me.
I was hearing the boulder first, then.
Yeah, I get either. Easily confused whether it's the boulder or Caitlin talking to me. So.
I mean, have you ever seen us in the same place at the same time?
I have not.
I don't know what to tell you. All right, so we are the only three rewatchable people who are not at Comic-Con right now. So you get a three-person show again. So before we jump right into it, if you want to get in touch with us, you can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. Twitter, you can talk to Brittany at @re_watchable. You can comment on this post on hypeable.com, or also talk to Brittany at rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. So Brittany is all over the place, and we love it.
I'm everywhere. Not like the boulder. So.
Yeah, it's all boomy. All right, so as usual, we will get started with fun facts. Mitch, do you have a fun fact for us?
Yes, and remind me if I'm wrong, Caitlin, you've seen Twin Peaks, right?
No.
Oh, I thought you had. I thought you were going to get excited about this one. That's sad. Regardless, and Brittany, I don't think you've watched it, right?
Absolutely not.
Oh my God, I hope there's someone out there that could appreciate this that's listening. I'm sure they are, because every once in a while we get requests to do Twin Peaks for Rewatchable. And I accidentally tripped over a Twin Peaks mini convention. It was like a film festival in the town that they shot at a diner once. And I went to the diner just to get food because I was like, I got to check it out. And it was so busy. And I was like, this is the worst service ever. How come anyone ever eats here? And it was because that was just like their special thing. So if you ever happen to go to, I forget the town's name. It's near this, I don't even know how to pronounce the falls that are near it. Because, you know, I don't know if you guys would even know on my Facebook, Caitlin and Brett. Did you see the picture? Or Caitlin and, Brittany.
Yeah, Brittany.
You saw the one I had. So those falls are the intro falls of the TV show. I'll post it on Twitter so people can see what I'm talking about. And I think that's the Sunocomoli Falls. It's spelled really weird. It's a really long name. That's the town closest to it. It's in Washington. So it's really scenic. I'd suggest anyone else going out there, not on convention day, because that's a really small town. It's like shoving everyone into Forks, Washington for a TwiCon. It's not going to work.
All right. So neither Brittany or I have any idea what that means. So
because I haven't watched the show either, but it's part of like Seattle culture that you know what this is, like how to get there and like what goes on there and stuff. It's an eerie town. I'll give you that much. It's really cool.
So if you know what Mitch is talking about, tweet him your appreciation.
And your anger for me not remembering either the town name or the falls, how to pronounce them. Sorry.
Yeah. Tweet your anger for Mitch not knowing anything about where he's living.
Also that. Brittany, what is your fun fact this week?
So I went to a taping of the Late Show with Stephen Colbert this week. It was the last night that he did the live broadcast of the Republican National Convention. And he asked the audience at the end of the taping if we wanted to, you know, would be happy sticking around and recording like some audience noise and like little like, you know, B-roll stuff for the Friday night show. But we were there till like 2 o'clock in the morning, and it was insane. And also the most amazing experience ever. My friend, who is also a writer for Hypeable, Christina, and I won a Twitter contest while we were in line, and we got these upgraded seats, and we were front row. We're on camera like all the time. It was so much fun. But my fun fact is that we fell for the stupidest prank in the entire world. It wasn't even really a prank, but we read online yesterday that the producers were all standing around Stephen Colbert's desk pointing up at a light. And I was like, oh, like, I'm like, what is going on to Christina? And they're all pointing, and a person kept running back and forth from the back to the front being like, I don't know what's going on. Like, maybe they can turn it off and all this stuff. So I'm like, there's a lighting issue. This is crazy. We come to find out that the reason that they were doing that was because they were trying to sneak Jon Stewart in to hide in a crawl space under Colbert's desk so that it would be a surprise. And we totally fell for it. It was unbelievable. And that's why they were doing that. There was nothing wrong with the lights. They were just trying to create a diversion so that Jon Stewart could, like, army crawl from the back and get into this little crawl space to pop up and surprise everyone.
How smart.
Good job, Colbert team, because totally fell for it. And I felt really stupid.
When can we all see on TV? Do you know when it's going to air?
Oh, yeah. It was live, so it was on Thursday.
I missed the boat.
Yeah, it was live.
And Jon Stewart was amazing. I'm so jealous.
Yeah, he came out and did like 13 straight minutes of like a basic, like a little Daily Show thing, and it was so good, and everything was great. But it's available on demand on CBS.com if anyone wants to see me. I'm in the front row. I'm waving a sign that says Late Night with Stephen Colbert. I have glasses. It's amazing.
All right. Well, my fun fact this week is that I am a aunt twice over now. I already had one niece in Australia. My brother and his wife had a baby this past week, and a little girl named Ada.
Yeah. Ada, such a pretty name. How do you spell Ada?
A-D-A.
Cool. Really simple. I like that.
Yeah, so it's funny because she shares a birthday with my sister, so they stole her birthday for the baby's birth. I went down to see them. It was born on the 21st, which was Thursday. We went down Friday, and she's so tiny. She's like 6 pounds something. She's very little. But, so cute. So
wonderful.
I'm an aunt twice over now. So that is my fun fact.
Congrats, Caitlin. That's so cool.
Yeah, very cool. I love nieces and nephews, so love it.
Yeah, this one we actually get to see since my sister's daughter, they live in Australia. So my mother is very excited about it, to have a grandchild she actually gets to see because they're an hour apart.
While we're talking like fun facts and sharing birthdays, my best friend is a really big fan of Taylor Swift's, like number one, and she just happens to share the same birthday as her. So every year I just wish Taylor Swift a happy birthday, and I like purposely ignore my friend as the joke of it all. Sharing birthdays with celebrities is usually not a good time because everyone seems to forget about yours.
Yeah, my dad is a big Grateful Dead fan, and when I was born, he was just so happy and excited. And he's like, as soon as I stepped into the waiting area, they said on the radio that it was Jerry Garcia's birthday and they played a Grateful Dead song. And it was the happiest I've ever been in my life. I was like,
is that your
favorite
kind of ice cream now?
No, because I can't have ice cream because I'm lactose intolerant.
Oh, shoot.
Ben and Jerry's does have a dairy-free version now, and I've tried every flavor and it's delicious. But they don't have the Grateful Dead, Cherry Garcia, yet.
What a fun connection. I love that.
All right. Well, enough of fun facts. Let's go ahead and move on to our episodes. So first we have Buffy, episode 404, Fear Itself. So Mitch, I think you wrote this synopsis.
Yes, ma'am.
All right. So in this episode, a fun-sized demon ruins Halloween for everyone by murdering frat bros. Because demon symbols are fun to play with, a frat accidentally calls forth a demon named Gaknar that feeds off fear and can make spooky Halloween toys come to life. Oz starts phasing and scratches Willow, Xander disappears to everyone around him, and Willow is attacked by an angry horde of lightning bugs. When it comes time to vanquish the demon, a Red Riding Hooded Buffy squashes Gaknar like a bug, and all is made well with chocolate bars and drawn-to-size demonology illustrations, which all accurate. So, what did you guys think of our next Halloween episode?
I liked it a lot better than the first Halloween episode, which
really?
Is surprising. Yeah, I don't know why. For some reason, like, this episode, I was just like, I wanted to keep watching it. Like, I was trying to, like, do laundry while I was watching it, and I'm like, I actually found myself, like, sitting down and really paying attention because I just liked everything that was going on. So,
nice.
Yeah, it was really – I liked it a lot.
Did you feel like it was similar, guys, to the previous one in concept of things that are usually just fake come, I guess, alive or become real on Halloween? I know that we're different in concept from the fact that that was costumes. This is props. ish, because it's like, I don't know, it feels like to me still, like, the fact that everyone's fears are coming true starts to feel like that Halloween episode, because they're changing their mindsets. Like, it feels like to me Willow turns, and was that part of it? Was Willow meant to be more angry, or what was going on with her? She started to feel like she was changing character under the spell.
I don't think so.
Like, yeah. That was just Willow fighting with Buffy like that.
Yeah, well, I think it was more of the fact that Willow was losing, like, her fear was not being, like, you know, a good enough witch or something, and, you know, Buffy not trusting her was kind of part of that. So I don't know necessarily how much of it was actually happening between the two of them, and how much Willow was taking it away incorrectly because of, like, in a different tone, I guess, because Buffy, you know, was sort of just being like, I'm going to take all of this on by myself, and Willow was taking it the wrong, not the wrong way, I guess. She took it as saying, Buffy saying, like, oh, you're not a good witch. Like, can we call her a witch, Caitlin?
Oh, yeah, I would, personally.
I mean, I think she often refers to herself as a Wicca.
A Wicca.
Oh, okay.
I feel like, though, because it's also not the first time that Buffy or somebody else has shown hesitation about Willow's magic. Like, we've seen both her and Oz pretty recently were saying, you know, I don't know about this, Willow. Like, this seems like it could be scary and dangerous and everything. So I think there are probably undercurrents for her that she's feeling like people don't trust her with the magic. And that was probably because of the stress of the situation kind of became like a breaking point, because she's already frustrated about that.
Yeah. And then when those things started, like, well, imaginarily, like, attacking her, it was sort of like, oh, you're right, I can't do this. Like, and that's her worst fear, is like realizing the fact that she can't do it.
See, here's the thing though. Like, I'm fine with the concept in terms of this episode as a whole of the Halloween props coming alive. But then the second concept that's introduced, where Xander disappears, and then after the fight that Buffy and Willow have, that started to feel a lot like the Freddy Krueger. No, it wasn't the Freddy Krueger nightmare episode. You know, the one where the little boy was beaten by his baseball coach,
and everyone's nightmares were.
It started to feel like that to me, and it also, once again, like I'm saying, started to feel a bit in the same tone as the other Halloween episode. I would have been so much happier if they really just stuck to the Halloween props came alive, because I can't think of too many moments, if any, in Buffy where we've had just like toys that come alive or anything. There's the dummy, I guess, but that it was creepy, it was effective, and then I got lost and confused in where the direction of the episode was going once they started introducing these concepts. I mean, honestly, I feel like even now I'm talking myself out of saying that the props are good, because I found that there was more substance in the fears showing, and if it was just that, that would have been cool. But do you guys think that it was anything messy, or were you okay with like the pacing and how they introduced the fears amongst the props and all that?
I don't find it messy at all, because it all ties together when you find out that it's this fear demon that feeds on fear. So it starts small, like with like bringing like a spider to life. And then as the fear, like as it starts freaking more people out, he gets more power as he gets a greater grip in like the house or whatever. So his power gets stronger. So he's able to manifest more. So he's able to animate more of the house to the point that he can actually get into people's heads basically and manipulate their fears. So to me, it was just an escalation of his power as he was getting more and more of a grip in the world.
Mm-hmm. I can see that. I can get behind that from the way you're describing it. As opposed to two separate concepts, it's evolution into your fears personally.
Yeah, I was thinking, actually, Mitch, I was going to respond to your initial comment and say, yeah, I felt a little like cheated, especially with like, you know, when the skeleton came to life and like that weird one-eyed like zombie looking thing. But
that was
after
funny.
Yeah, really, but after though. Caitlin said that, it does make more sense that he got more and more power and made those other things come to life, because I don't think like anyone would be afraid of that hanging skeleton, but because he had the power, it was, you know, he was able to then feed on other things that were available to him and make them gross. I mean, the eyeballs were really disgusting. I thought that was when she like put her hand in and he's like, oh, it's eyeballs, and then she pulled it out and it was all like gross. I was like, that's disgusting.
Oh, and we have an eyeball and angel this week, too.
Yeah.
I was going to say that it feels like they should have used something of that practical effect in Angel. Used, like, a fishing line, I guess, to, like, hang the eyeball in that Angel episode, because it looks so good in this episode.
Could have just shared props, cut the budget. It would have been great.
Seriously, yeah. It's kind of... like, some of the best horror movies, quite frankly, are made with, in Star Wars and whatnot, have been made with just practical props. If you're using just prosthetics and stuff to lose limbs or have eyeballs fly around or whatever, it looks so much better.
I wanted to talk about each person's fear, because yes, we get to see Buffy, Willow, Xander, and Oz, and each of their fears. So Buffy, we can start with Buffy. She is still dealing with the fallout from Parker, who is a big, horrible douchebag that I really love Willow. And she was like, you know, we'll chop his head off. That's Halloween-y. So Buffy is really struggling with this because she was abandoned by Angel at the end of the last season. And then she's got like the Parker thing going on. So she's really struggling with the whole loneliness thing. So that's what she basically is attacked by, like these zombies, like, you'll never be alone. And they're attacking her. It's really horrifying. So what do you guys think about Buffy's biggest fear manifesting as like her being alone?
I think it was actually, I needed it in this episode, which I know sounds weird, but I was so annoyed by her in the beginning of the episode, where she, even towards the middle, where she was just like, oh, I guess I'm the third wheel. And I was like, you really can't be alone, like, for a week? And I was so frustrated by that. I was so annoyed with the fact that she even had to vocalize that. But then, towards the end, it's like, it makes sense that she's afraid of being alone because all these other people have someone who, when things go wrong in, like, their central group, they can branch out and find. And we saw that in this episode, like, if something wasn't going right, even Xander didn't feel like he was a part of that group. He had Anya, and Giles has apparently his own great party life in his home with his great Halloween decorations. And when Willow's not with Buffy, she can go to Oz. And even her mom, when she goes to her mom, like the only person who probably should be there, she's like, but you know what? I learned and I got friends and all this stuff. So, yeah, Buffy has her friends and that group, but I feel like right now she feels like the only thing that's really keeping them together is like, oh, who are we going to fight now? And when they were together carving the pumpkins, it was like, oh, but I'm still going to talk about Oz, and I'm still going to talk about, you know, Anya coming over and all this stuff, even though you were supposed to take away from that moment that Xander wanted to be like, you know, complaining about Anya, whatever. But I really needed that whole, as weird as it was, horror story scenario to get the point that, like, okay, this is a real thing that Buffy's dealing with right now, and I guess that's the storyline that I have to pay attention to, because I was just getting so frustrated with her being upset about not having a boyfriend, but I don't think it's so much a boyfriend anymore as I did in the beginning.
I get a little bit tired with the Red Riding Hood trope. I mean, I really could make a really killer Into the Woods, No One Is Alone music video for this episode, I'm sure. But I find that, like, it's played pretty well. There's a movie called Trick or Treat that takes the Red Riding Hood Halloween trope and flips on its head in a wonderful way. So, and it's Anna Paquin's character, if anyone's ever seen that movie. I think that that was still actually pretty similar to what Buffy had going on here, because they're trying to show, like, when she gets stabbed by the skeleton, she's like, you know, oh, it's okay, the cape caught it, and she feels strong and independent, and like, she's not really a Red Riding Hood character. She's not alone. She has her friends looking after her. And I also thought that this zombie guy was kind of creepy. He really got me, like, once again, I think that was a lot of practical stuff going on, like the hands coming up and the way that he was like saying, you're always going to be alone, the way he's coming after her. His makeup looked great, and I felt for Buffy's plight in this episode. It made it come together for me that she's really affected by, not like you're like Brittany, I think you're coming to the same conclusion as me here, that she's not just so sad about being alone. She said that she decided to open up her heart again after such a big love with Angel, only to have it stomped on by a jackass. And that's what makes her feel so depressed and alone, as opposed to not having a boyfriend. It's to having tried to do it again and have it fail. But then again, it gets a bit annoying. I'm with you when she's like, great, I'm the fifth wheel. and all of that. That stuff I was ready to see go, and I think she's gotten over this episode. I'll be excited to see if she's feeling better in the next episode, because this one, it definitely felt like almost exhausting to watch Buffy go through this, as necessary as it is.
I think what works so well about it for me is that it's been pretty clear that Buffy is such an effective slayer because she has these people around her, and she always has people coming in, like from the council or from other areas that have dealt with other slayers or whatever. They're like, other people know about you? Like, what about secret identities? And she's like, whatever, you know, I've got my friends. And that's what's made her such an effective hero up until this point. And so for her, being alone is so dangerous. Like the Buffy in the Wishverse who was alone is the one who dies. Like Buffy needs her friends to live and be strong. So for her, being alone is really, really dangerous, not only like hard emotionally, but it's actually really dangerous for her as a slayer. So I always think it's interesting because she's such a team player with the rest of her friends that being alone would be really hard for her and would really affect her slaying too. So she's got all this going on, and I think it makes a lot of sense to see her dealing with the being alone thing.
Wishverse was so important. I'm glad that you're driving that home here by bringing that up again. It's so great that we have that to show the alternate alone Buffy. She feels like she's alone now. It's like, just if you could see what you really would be like alone as the Slayer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, for her, her friends make her the good hero that she is. So alone is bad. How about Willow? So Willow's fear that manifests is she loses control of her magic, and she's been developing her magic as slowly as we go. And there, it seems like in the last few episodes, there have been more and more conversations about like her trying things and where she is as a witch or a Wicca. And, you know, her friends are starting to get a little concerned about her because magic's really dangerous, but she's very confident in it. But then it's clear then from this spell that she's actually under all that confidence, afraid of losing control. So how did you guys feel about Willow losing control of her magic as her fear?
I thought it was really actually touching, because Willow is so confident in like her ability to learn and her desire to learn, and she really wants a mentor out of all of this, which is what I got from her in the beginning of the episode, her saying like, I've sort of plateaued and I just don't know where to go from here and all that stuff. And she really needs someone who can sort of guide her. And she is nervous to keep going forward without that person in her life. And this was just a really great way of mirroring that back and saying like, yeah, even though you have a hold on these little charms and in like incantations and stuff like that, like they could go wrong at any moment. And it's sort of a point that her friends have been driving home too. And watching even like these, there were these little like lightning bugs, but like, to lose control of something so small and just that really affecting Willow, I thought was just great for her character. And it sort of opened up the question of like, are we as viewers ready to see someone else step in and help Willow? Because I think after this episode, I am ready for someone to come in and help Willow, just because I feel bad and I want her to do well and succeed.
They built that up pretty well in this episode where they kept referencing, there are dark arts that you don't want to meddle with. Trust me, I lose control as a werewolf and I hate it. You don't want to feel that way. I know that that feels to me like a Chekhov's gun waiting to go off, that she's going to get way in over her head, that she's not going to learn from this lesson of the lightning bugs. Personally, I feel like she's going to go on further. I think she's going to do something really dangerous. Maybe she'll create the next big bad. That could be cool. Because do we have a big bad for this season? I mean, Spike-ish, but he's already kind of like out of the picture because he's like, wah, wah, lost twice in a row. So I wonder, do you think that that'd be a good theory to have happen, Britt, if she's the build-up for the big bad, not herself? Well, she could be possessed or something, but that kind of feels like a Team Wolf Caitlin with Styles.
I don't know.
Oh, you know. What do you think, Britt? Do you think that would be effective to show, like, the best friend becoming the big bad and you have to try and save the friend while, you know, exercising the demon kind of stuff?
Yeah, I think that would be a really good plot point. However, I could see her more unlocking something that she doesn't realize. But I think they overplayed that too much in that this episode for that to happen, now that I think about it. Like, you know, that kid being like, oh, I found this really cool, stupid symbol to draw on the floor. And then, like, just it happening all by, like, really random coincidence. So I don't think that they'll play with that again, but I like where you're going with the fact that she might go one step too far and they'd have to, like, stop her and be like, okay, Willow, chain her up or something and just wait it out.
Chain her up and wait it out like a werewolf?
Yeah, I mean, or okay. Like Angel, like put her in, you know, like one of those types
of things.
Is
she a werewolf, Britt?
No, she's not a werewolf. She's fine.
Because, like, they don't bring it up, but they show it. So, like, when the shot happens, they show it for, like, a good 5 seconds. They just stare at her hand, and I'm like, okay, you're holding on this. Fine. This means something.
Well, I think it's more that, like, her loved one physically harmed her.
And, like, will she still trust him after that sort of deal?
I don't know, because I don't think that we do know yet. Maybe this is a worry I'm supposed to have, because I don't think in the series they've defined bite or scratch, because... and I'm thinking of just Remus Lupin. He gets scratched in the face, and there that does it for him. So,
Oz was bit.
He was bit. So I'm wondering, if it just has to be a bite in Buffyverse. I feel like it does from the perspective of Caitlin. But it's okay, because I'd rather her not become a werewolf. So honestly, it's a relief to figure that she's not, because Oz still has to go have that mutant alien baby. Let's not go there again. Listen, it's going to happen.
It's not going to happen.
That girl's gonna come up. It's gonna be good. That's why I got excited for the scratch, because I was like, oh, now we're gonna have like girl on girl werewolf fight. Like, they're gonna fight for Oz's attention and love or imprintedness or something crazy.
Caitlin, save me.
So Xander, his fear is that he becomes invisible. So he, which is obviously ties into the fact that all his friends have gone off to college and he's still living in his parents' basement. He was a millennial ahead of his time in that way. And so he's kind of he's been doing a lot more things on his own. And when he comes to campus, everyone's kind of like, what are you doing here, Xander? He doesn't even go here.
Yeah.
She doesn't even go here.
Obviously, Xander's dealing with feeling like he's kind of getting pushed to the outside of his friend group. And his fear literally manifests as becoming invisible. So, Mitch, thoughts on Xander being invisible?
Built up really well. I think that scene with the frat bros was a great build up for this episode overall, from the fact that it showed the spider that's going to land on Willow later. It showed, of course, the symbol starting. It showed that dark magic that was played with that Oz was worrying about. And it also showed that Xander doesn't fit in, because they said, you know, basically you go to school here. And then Oz is like, no, he's a civilian. I think that scene set up the episode so well. And it was so subtle, all of those little bits. I think that this season so far has been really impressive. I really like the story elements that they're going with. Like, this was cool. I loved that this was the representation of Xander's biggest fear. We should also note that it's changed from clowns to being invisible. So I think he's faced enough demons to understand that clowns aren't the most scary thing anymore. And perhaps he got over that when he was being chased after it in that one episode. And now he's on to invisibility.
Yeah, I really liked that they brought that up, because I couldn't understand why Buffy at first was repeating everything that Xander was saying. And then it made total sense when Xander was completely invisible to them, because that's just that's when I got basically the crux of the episode. I was like, that is so smart that they're making their fears come to life, because I was waiting for that to happen for so long, and it just didn't feel like that was going to be the episode. And I'm like, oh, they really let us down with this thing, with the episode title. And that was the moment, was Xander's fear of being ignored and sort of left out, where I felt like the episode was really coming together. So I like how they played it. His, I thought, was definitely the strongest out of the bunch, because Buffy was, I guess, in effect, by not having Buffy on screen as much, it was effective to say that she was alone, because she wasn't with anyone, even us at that moment. But I really liked Xander's a lot, and especially the end where he was just like, well, no one's going to listen to me anyway. I'm just going to sit here and talk.
Oh, so. and then they heard everything.
Yeah, like, then they heard everything because it was over. Yeah. And then to have fear be like this tiny little thing because, like, you know, you expect like this like big scary thing because it's fear. Like, you know, it should be crazy. And then it's just subverted in that way. And to be like, oh, I really shouldn't be afraid of fear. And in life, you should also not be afraid of the things that you are.
Like, what's the Hermione quote? Fear of a name only increases the fear of a name, of a thing itself or something like that.
I'm not going to fact check you, so I'll just say yes.
Well, yeah. It feels like this. It feels like this, this here. And that's because they're like, oh my God, it's a demon. It's the name of Fear Gaknar. And then they see him, and it's really nice just to see him be small. It's also a good change up from the fact that we've seen so many large, scary, big demons. And at first, when he comes out of, like, I know we're skipping ahead, Caitlin, I didn't mean to. I can wait for that later if you prefer. I'll let the be your decision. My impression on the small demon guy.
Let's talk about Oz first. Yeah. We still have Oz to talk about. So Oz's fear was losing control of the change, which leads to him hurting Willow. So I imagine that is actually part of his fear, is that he's going to hurt the ones that he cares about through him being a werewolf. So we see him, like, in the tub, like, trying to stop himself from changing. So I think that makes a lot of sense too, that Oz would be afraid of that side of him and losing control of it. So thoughts on that, Brittany?
Yeah, I thought that was a really legitimate fear, because for a while now, like the past season and a half, we've really just assumed that Oz has everything under control. But what about that one night or something where the moon is out and he just, like, they lose track of time or something like that? And it's a really, like, big fear. Like, he doesn't know what he's doing when he is a werewolf, and that's something that he always has to constantly think about. Those times that we did see he got out and wasn't locked up, his biggest concern was, who did I hurt? What did I do? I think that this really was a great point for him and Willow in their relationship, to be like, there's this thing that I'm never going to be able to control, but also Willow has to accept that she may not always be able to control her magic. And so I think it's a good, like, parallel for where they are in their individual lives and things they need to kind of figure out together as a couple, because they could easily hurt each other at any given point, or themselves.
Now I'm wondering if Oz has the ability to bring forth his change. Maybe there's like a drug they're gonna find, or a spell that when they want to go into battle, they can start getting Oz ready and they can start transforming him, kind of like the Hulk in the Avengers when they want to get him angry and stuff, to get roaring and raging for battle. Which also makes me feel like he could be like the Hulk and eventually get control over his werewolfy self, which could be really cool. They could use him as a big weapon. I imagine there being some big fight happening eventually. There's going to be like kind of akin to what they did on graduation day, but even bigger, maybe, where they have to fight a bunch of vampires and they could use werewolf odds, but they want to know that he's on their side. So I'd be excited to see that, because I think this opens the door to it. Even though this was coming in via, once again, a spell or fear, I think that this could be an interesting concept to see werewolf Oz, even like half-phased werewolf Oz. He still had decent control. I know he hurt Willow, but he was still talking and pushing her away and stuff. Like, he knew what was going on. So that could be fun if he could even get to that point.
That's my secret. I'm always laconic.
Yes. Side grin, yeah. And jump away.
All right, so now let's talk about Gaknar himself. So we, like, Giles and Anya come into the house and they realize that the frat boys, fun fact, the frat boy who brings the book was the original Black Power Ranger. Hello.
Look at that.
I can't believe I didn't bring up the house yet. The house is the murder house from American Horror Story.
Brittany.
Yeah.
Why didn't you tell me this earlier? You just watched these, didn't you? That's why.
I watched them today.
Oh, my God. I would have loved. I'm going to have to go back and watch.
Yeah, it is. Apparently, this is the filming location in Los Angeles that you go to when you want to make a very creepy home.
I can kind of see it in, like, the staircase in my mind's eye.
Yeah, it's not so, like, I mean, the interior, kind of, but it's the exterior shots that are definitely murder house.
Oh, wow. Because, I mean, the Murder House kind of has, like, little steeples, if I'm remembering correctly.
It's, like, that big, like, rounded front and then, like, the entryway. You'll see it. As soon as you look at it again, you'll know.
I'm really excited. That's so funny.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm sorry. Let's talk about fear, though.
Yeah.
Fear demon.
Yeah, so they realize that the symbol that they wrote on the ground just to be creepy, actually, is one that summons Gaknar as demon of fear. And there's this great moment where, you know, oh, how do we kill him? And Giles starts going, you know, destroying the symbol. So Buffy slams through the floor and Giles was not one of them and will bring him forth immediately.
That was incredible.
Beautiful. I love their relationship. Giles and Buffy have such a rapport by now. They just go at it.
Oh, it's so good. But so you get this big overture of like, oh my god, this horrible demon is coming, and then he's Polly Pocket sized, basically.
Polly Pockets, yes.
Which I love what Brittany was saying earlier about, you know, symbolizing that, you know, fear should not be this overwhelming thing. We should If you face your fears, it's something that you can stamp on, basically.
Squash. Just.
Yeah. Did you guys enjoy that little twist? Were you surprised when he was really, really tiny?
Oh, hell yeah. Like, those spikes in his face were so intense, and he had, like, this fog machine behind him. I was like, uh-oh, you know when a villain has a fog machine, shit's about to go down. And then he was just like an ant. He was like Ant-Man. It was just, boop.
Yeah, especially because they were, like, looking at, like, this grated thing, and I'm like, how is he going to rise through the grates? And I'm, like, waiting for him to, like, you know, bust it apart and just be like, ah, in Buffy's face. But then you, like, realize he's standing on the grate the whole time. And I was like, that is so funny. And I loved the way this whole episode ended, down to, like, when they were back at Giles's. It was just so well done. I was very happy with the way this episode ended. It was.
Well, do you guys think they should have kept playing it, or do you think they should have ended it right there?
No, I really think they should have kept playing it, because it was. It'll
go on to the chocolate bars.
Oh yeah, go on to the chocolate bars, because I felt more like, I feel like that would have run through credits. Like, on watching it on Netflix, it's hard because you don't know how it was, like, played out. But I feel like that would have been, like, in addition to credits, you know, instead of, like, a coming next week. Like, I feel like they might have had a break or something, and this would have been,
kind of
like, an extra
Friends
credit.
Does or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would have been more appropriate, because it didn't feel like, because that definitely felt like a stinger that is not quite unnatural to Buffy, like, but something that was a little bit too, like, hokey for the real ending.
Like, so if this was, like, playing on TV, like, the credits would have been going either underneath it or, like, next to it, and then it would have just ended. Like, that's what I thought of it as.
Yeah. No, I can see that. More, like, sitcom-y stuff. Mm-hmm. It was still fun. No, don't get me wrong. The candy was amazing. Like, that was... And I liked Anya. We didn't mention she was in her bunny suit this whole time.
Because she's terrified of bunnies.
Because they're cuddly. Of course she would hate them.
I love that moment when Xander's like, you're supposed to pick something that terrifies you. It's terrifying. He's like, bunnies scare me.
Listen, she's seen Legally Blonde, all right?
The ending of that with Gaknar being pocket-sized is such a Buffy thing, and I love it. It's such a good twist on things.
I hope other shows took this after. I feel like they had to have, like, the demons finally summoned, and it's kind of silly. Like, that seems like something Supernatural would do.
Hasn't yet, that I can recall, but...
In all, like, 5 million episodes they've done. Who knows?
So one other thing that I do want to talk about that we haven't mentioned much is the army guys that have popped up a couple of times now. And one of them seemed like he recognized Buffy when they were walking past to the house. They kind of stopped and looked at each other. So what are your guys' theories about what is going on with the army dudes?
Well, I knew that they were important because they showed them in the previously on Buffy before the episode started. And then when they came out, it just was, it's a perfect, like, Halloween episode trope of any type of thing. Even, like, Halloween movies where, like, oh, they're in costume. It doesn't matter. We don't need to pay attention to them right now. And it allows them to be in plain sight. And when they did come out and sort of, like, stopped and looked at Buffy, Buffy was just like, oh, those are creeps. Like, why are they staring at me? But since they caught that vampire, I think that maybe he gave them some information or something and they knew who they were looking for, but carry on with whatever else they were doing, because it might be part of a bigger plan. So that is definitely probably our big bad of season four that we haven't spent a lot of time with, but they're still laying the groundwork for. We're only in episode four, so there's plenty of time to do that. But I think it was just another subtle reminder, like, oh, this whole thing is still happening, but have fun with this episode.
Yeah, what's their digs? I don't know what they're doing here. Because, I mean, I'm talking Willow being the big bad here, but I'm starting to see, yeah, Caitlin, I'm glad you added this back in, because I feel like they also added this scene in so that they can also show another previously on to when they actually become, you know, part of the forefront, when they're important, they're doing stuff, but they needed to show like a more recent clip than just the one that they take the vampire in. So that's cool. And then Buffy can have a recognition. She can say, hey, you were those guys on Halloween, and everyone else was there too. So that was an intelligent moment to bring in the big bads, assumedly. I don't know what they're going to do at all. I have absolutely no guesses. I mean, I feel like we've already kind of seen this with like the Hunger Games that they had, where all those other vampires were coming after the Slayer and Cordelia. That was akin to what this felt like to me, just from the fact that they were really souped up soldiers ready to shoot people, I guess. But I don't know. Maybe they're doing like vampire experiments. Maybe they want to like learn how to become immortal from the vampires or something, or whatever it may be.
So do you think they're humans or monsters who are hiding their faces? What do you think?
I'm totally on team human here, because it feels like only humans would care to use guns, as we've defined, because most vampires and other creatures, they just like to claw and punch their way through things. As soon as they use a gun, it's a weird thing. I mean, going back to Darla when she's shooting Angel, that felt like such an odd moment, because that's not something demons would do.
Yeah, I feel like these are part of like something that's countering whatever the FBI was doing when, like, you know, they took those invisible people to their special training school. Or maybe these are the invisible people and they're just wearing these costumes. And
so you're saying girl?
Yeah. So like, yeah. My initial thought, like right now in this moment, was that they're like a counter, like, you know, like, oh, well, if we found out like the FBI is like working with these invisible people, there might be other creatures out there. And so, like, they're working against that, but they could also maybe, now that I'm thinking about it, be the actual invisible people who are wearing these outfits, which totally. That would defeat the purpose, because if you're invisible, you should stay invisible. But, you know, or something akin to that, like, that storyline. They also kind of reminded me of the only episode that I have ever seen of Teen Wolf, because Karen, our other wonderful podcast host, was on a Teen Wolf, like, after talk thing, and I watched it too early. So I watched the end of that episode of Teen Wolf, and there were, like, these crazy people, like, drilling through walls with, like, these creepy goggles and gas masks on, and these people reminded me of them so much, but I still don't know what they were doing. So I assumed that they took the werewolves to study them, and these people are going to take the vampires to study them.
I think that was the idea. I didn't watch too much of that season of Teen Wolf. I don't think Caitlin did either.
That was the only episode I've ever watched of Teen Wolf.
I think you're close from what crazy. I've seen. Yeah, that shows. It takes what Buffy does. I mean, talk about shows you would like if you like Buffy, because it kind of stays to me like, well, this is not another Teen Wolf podcast. They can talk about that there.
I was going to say, we already have a podcast for that.
We do.
All right, last thing for this episode. Buffy has a little moment with Riley. Thoughts on the pair of them?
They care. Buffy, just stay single for a hot second.
Yeah.
Is that going to be a thing, do you think?
I mean, he's adorable. He's a TA. He's, like, knowledgeable. Whatever. I'm into it. Ship it. But I also just want Buffy to stay single for a while.
I don't know how to ship it, because the only thing I know him as is the nice TA. He doesn't have anything like that. Like,
you brought up Legally Blonde before. It could be, like, an Emmett L. type of situation.
Oh, that'd be cute. That'd actually be more adorable now that you present it that way. Okay.
All right, I just wanted to bring up that was a thing that happened. Okay.
I mean, I just don't trust him. It feels like we don't know enough about him. I mean, he could be like a supernatural. He could just be some kind of neutral evil. Again, like Doyle. Oh, God, I just can't trust anyone on this show.
All right, any final thoughts, or should we move on to favorite scenes and favorite lines?
Oh, they brought up Ted in this episode, speaking about burying stories.
Yes, they did.
When I was waiting and waiting and waiting while Joyce was talking, I'm like, bring up Ted. She's like, you know what, I had a hard time trusting people, and she kept going on and on and on. She's like, and the last time I dated, I was like, and I thought she was going to go with Giles, and even though it wasn't really dating, but then she brought up Ted, and I was like, yes, she brought up Ted.
Probably didn't help Joyce that her Martha Stewart friend was possessed and murdered. So,
and tried to burn her daughter at the stake. That's the last time she socialized with any high school parents.
Joyce has problems, okay? She's trying to get through them.
Poor Joyce. I wouldn't want to be a parent on the Hellmouth either.
And why do we bring up, they keep bringing up again, like the same issue, you broke up the marriage, Buffy. And she's like, I know I did. And then Joyce is like, no. And it's like, haven't we been through this like freaking three seasons ago in the Nightmare episode, matter of fact?
Well, I mean, that's probably something that kids of divorced parents don't just get over.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't know. I'll give you that.
And it ties into the loneliness thing.
Is her dad going to come back, I wonder? That's not a question for you, Caitlin. Do you think that was supposed to be a lead-up for her father to come back, Brett?
Maybe, because they haven't brought it up in a long time, and I feel like in this episode they were bringing up a lot of things that are like, oh, remember? You should remember all this stuff that's actually happening in the Buffy universe, but also have fun at the same time because it's Halloween and there are cute costumes and Giles in a nice sombrero. So I feel like they were trying to lay some groundwork, but also bring up some things that we should probably be paying attention to going forward.
See, it's funny that they're talking about transfiguration and everything. Willow's like, I want to do that next. But she doesn't bring up Amy. I think she's just given up. She's just like, oh no, Amy. That's just the rat that watches
still
you fuck
a rat.
Oz.
I forgot
poor
about
Amy. She's the one that's getting the short end of the stick in this series.
She's not even living in their dorm room. Like,
she probably has a nice wheel. I'm sure she's happy.
I wonder
like, Willow should have brought her to college with them.
I wonder if she's like Scabbers, like she can still understand what's going on, but is becoming more and more rat-like as the years go on. Like, you know, if she's really seeing everything that's going on. Well, we should ask Buffy. She was a rat at one point. We should ask her how she felt, if she remembers anything. Matter of fact, from Amy, she was a rat. I'm surprised they haven't had a conversation about that. It's kind of funny.
Well, because she's a rat. She can't have a conversation about it.
No, everyone's not like, so what was it like when Amy turned you into?
No, like, they just don't care about Amy. They're like, eh,
they don't.
Fine.
They just don't care about this girl. Like, they saved her once, and they're like, God, you're still around? Can't you go, like, cheerlead or something?
All right, so let's move on to favorite scenes. Mitch, what was your favorite scene?
My favorite scene was the juxtaposition of the Scooby saying, oh, yeah, we're going to have such a fun night. This is going to be so cool. We finally get to relax. There aren't any demons on Halloween. And then it jumps to a hilarious horror scene of all the partygoers in the attic, like, screaming and being murdered brutally by monsters and creatures and spiders and whatnot. So they're all dead, right? Like, they're gone. Like, that's a large amount. Like, that was probably, I don't know, 50 people just killed on this campus and whatever.
I feel like most of them, well, maybe some of them got out.
The windows were all trapped up and shit.
Not the Hawaiian girl or the guy who fell down the stairs.
Yeah, I felt for him. That was kind of a sad moment.
Brittany, what was your favorite scene?
Mine was Giles answering the door in his sombrero because I've seen this gif 1,000 times and I have no idea where it was from. And I'm really into it. And just the fact that he was celebrating Halloween and was so into it, but he always gave off this vibe of, like, you know, being like, well, whatever, Halloween. And he was like, look, it's alive. And, like, that little thing decoration came to life. But then also when he took off the sombrero after Buffy asked him to and he ran his hand through his hair. I know he's, like, old and supposed to be, like, not cool, but Giles is my man. So I was into it.
Man, as an adult, I feel Giles.
Oh, God, as an adult. I'm so glad I'm watching this as an adult because I'm just glad, like, being into Xander is not a thing because I have Giles as an alternate.
You're shipping Buffy Giles now. Ooh, that's come up with a new ship name.
I'm not shipping Buffy
Biles? Giles. That sounds rather appropriate. No. Biles.
I am not shipping Buffy Giles in any way, shape, or form. I just want that on record. I just like Giles as a human being.
Mitch is projecting his own shipping.
Yes, and I am rejecting it.
was his costume a negative appropriation? Was it something that
it was total 90s appropriation of what
so that's
you
like
never
that's kind of nasty, right? Like, I was thinking about it and I was like, this feels gross.
He was wearing like a poncho and a sombrero. I mean,
yeah,
he was doing like the Day of the Dead thing.
Yeah,
like, I guess that's like of the times that they wouldn't have noticed or cared as much about that in certain cultures to know that that was bad.
Yes.
Okay.
All right, so
we're on the same page there, because it seemed like no one was going to bring it up. I was like, I don't know, guys. It's the 90s.
It's a product of its time. Mm-hmm. There are certain things you just acknowledge. This was the 90s.
Mm. But the show is oddly not homophobic, which is funny, because it also often has, like, positive affirmation of homosexuality, even through Larry and whatnot.
Oh yeah, like that whole episode. It is. It's weird. It's not like completely progressive, but it's also stuck in a product of its time.
Yeah, because like women's rights seems to be decent and getting there and doing well and making strides. Of course, the representation in the show is horribly white, like drastically just white, and it's so crazy still. I'm still waiting for them. Like, they're introducing that's the thing. Like, I keep going back to this, but I feel like the reason I'm not remembering these love interests is not because they're just all white boys. It's because they really just look the same. They're the same typecasted person. It's not even that they're just casting white people. They're casting the same-looking white people. Same thing in Angel when they were casting all those Buffy lookalikes to make him feel sad. It gets so confusing, guys. I'm really ready for some, like, different-looking people on this show. So, but I don't think it's going to happen. It's the 90s. We're stuck here. Enjoy while it lasts.
I'm just glad the chokers are in. Like, that's one thing they got right.
All right, so my favorite scene was the Gaknar reveal because it's just so brilliant and you think it's like, oh my god, the worst thing ever, and then he's tiny and it's amazing. And you get the look of everyone looking down at him and he's like squeaking like, fear me, and everyone's like laughing. It just, oh, I love it. It's so funny. It's such a Buffy moment. I love it so much.
Did they make the fun size joke here? They should have if they didn't, because I did.
The what? Oh, like candy?
Yeah.
Oh. I don't know if fun size was a huge thing right now.
Back then, yeah.
Yeah, back then, meaning like what?
Because like they're eating candy bars in the end, and you would think that they would work it in there somehow.
Well, we had a good line, and let's go to that. Brittany, your favorite line is a quality line.
It was the line that happened at the end of the episode where Giles is like, oh, bloody hell, the inscription. And Buffy's like, what's the matter? Buffy says, I should have translated the Gaelic inscription on the illustration of Gaknar. Buffy's like, what does it say? Giles says, actual size.
And cut.
That was so good. I love it.
Like, it was so worth the extra 30 seconds of footage.
You can tell the actors were just done. Like, they didn't care. They're like, I'm eating candy for the day, whatever.
Not even that. It's just, like, Giles was, like, built in that moment was like, oh, no, you shouldn't have done that. I'm like, ah. And he was like, it would have saved me a lot of, like, being upset when I realized if I had just known it just said actual size.
I love him saying bloody hell, too. I can't remember him saying that too often.
Yeah. Oh, Giles.
Well, mine is also a Giles line, so I'll go ahead and do mine. So mine is just one that I remember so fondly many, many years after seeing this the first time. It's still one of my favorites. So after the Gaknar reveals, Xander's like, who's the little fear demon? Come on, who's the little fear demon? And Giles goes, don't taunt the fear demon. And Xander immediately is like, why? Can he hurt me? And Giles goes, no, it's just tacky. Oh, I love
Giles
it.
Giles and Xander's relationship this season has been one of my favorite things, and it's only 4 episodes in, because he's just like accepting that Xander's never going to go away, but also so intolerant of his behavior.
And they both like have nothing to do, so they're going to hang out and just like look up things and yell at each other.
Just like when Xander was like just randomly over Giles's house helping him organize books.
Yeah.
Giles has a TV. He's shallow like us. Mitch, what was your favorite line?
Sorry, guys, I took the Oz quote from the intro. It's when they're talking about the horror movie that Xander was meant to rent. He wanted to have, like, Phantasmagoria or something, but they ended up getting Fantasia. So Oz just goes, maybe it's just all the horrific things we've seen, but hippos wearing tutus just don't unnerve me the way they used to.
Oz is always good for a line. I love Oz.
He is. They write him so well. I never get sick of him, like, ever.
All right. So, that was Buffy, our next Halloween Buffy episode. So let's move on to Angel Season 1, Episode 4, I Fall Apart, which is... this is a disturbing episode. All right, so in this episode, Doyle wants to get into Angel's dark, mysterious coat almost as much as dismembering Yogi Optician wants to get into the life of a woman he's stalking. A Doyle vision leads Angel to flop uncontrollably at the notably brunette Melissa's feet. When an optical surgeon that Melissa went on one date with is showing up at her house and recalling specific details about her private life, the woman calls upon Angel Investigations to do some sleuthing and slicing. Angel bests the stalker, flops some more for Melissa, and can't seem to remember to put coffee grinds on his grocery list. This week is stalking bad. The theme of this week.
It's gross from like the stalking, and it's gross from like the slicing, and it's gross from the floating and the.
Stalking bad is also great, but the whole time I was watching the at least the first half of the episode, I was waiting like so patiently for the Law and Order SVU like dun dun. It felt like such a Law and Order SVU episode at the beginning. I was like what is happening?
Like the coworker, like, oh, we got her name, like that kind of cutesy, like humanizing moment before someone gets murdered or something.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just like it was a case like made for SVU. I was like, I've seen this plot before, I swear. And then like it was a person who cuts off their limbs, but I was like, oh no, I haven't seen that before, but I've seen something like it.
Yeah, so creepy in multiple ways. So this, we have a case of the week episode with a pretty serious topic. Does it seem like Angel may hit on some heavier topics, do you think, in terms of especially its case of the week stories? What are your impressions so far?
It has to, because the show seems to feature a more adult cast, because if we're thinking about it, Angel's like, God, if you're counting the time that he spent in hell, like 400 years old, I don't know, that's up for debate. Maybe he regressed a bit during that. And then we have, even Cordelia feels older to me. And I don't know how old Doyle is. He's also kind of like a demon, so he could be really old too. So everyone here feels like they can handle the stuff better, and they don't have like puberty and like first crushes and virginity to lose. They're kind of just like in it because they know what the adult world is like. They know how dark it is, and they know that they can get their hands down and dirty and that they'll be okay for it.
Yeah, I think the show so far, even though it's only been 4 episodes, has really set a precedent for the type of stories that they're willing to take on, especially because I think I commented last week, it just feels like it's a different damsel in distress every week, which is kind of frustrating at the moment. It's always like a woman as the victim and Angel comes and saves them. But this episode was all a little bit more tongue-in-cheek, being like, oh, Angel, like all the people are falling in love with you because they think of you as their protector. And the fact that they brought that up sort of felt like, okay, yes, we are tackling these issues that are affecting women, but also, like, I cannot always be the protector. So maybe going forward, the issues will be more universal to, like, men and other people. Like, I know that they were dealing with a demon a couple weeks ago, and this guy can, like, cut off his hands and stuff. So there's always going to be that supernatural element, but the fact that it's another woman as the victim and Angel comes in as this good-looking guy to come and save her is getting a little frustrating, I will say, but they're definitely not shying away from tackling more mature, I guess you can say, themes, because they're dealing with stalking and, like, an abusive husband was last week and, like, you know, there's a lot more serious stuff going on, and I don't know if it's to do with the fact that, like what Mitch was saying, like they're not in a school setting. It's not everything's squeaky clean.
Yeah, I had actually forgotten most of this episode. So it was kind of a like, oh, stalking. Okay, it's bad guy is, I mean, he's a human. And like he can do this supernatural thing in the psychic surgery, but he's still a human being. And this is a very human issue that they're tackling. It's not like demon causing the end of the world. It's a human stalking another human. And it makes sense that it would be a woman being stalked because it's far more likely to be a woman as the victim, which is a sad state of affairs. But yeah, like I just found it interesting that it's a very human issue that they're dealing with compared to some of the other ones that they have dealt with already. So, and it was heavy. So I was wondering how you guys felt it was handled in terms of sensitivity to an issue as serious as stalking.
It was good. And then like the moment when Doyle gives her like a shot of alcohol before she's questioned by the police, because it felt like they were comforting her in all the right ways. They were saying like, we'll protect you, we'll have a watch on you all the time. And she seemed real. Like her mental downfall that you see in this, just this episode, and the impression that you get that she's had this mental downfall for the past couple months, it felt real. And I think that that all brought together a really dark and realistic episode. I mean, of course, the eyeballs floating and watching her get undressed, and that's just whatever. But, like, other than that, the episode felt chillingly, like, yeah, like an SVU episode. It was, it even had, like, the same kind of tone. Like, I swear I can hear, like, the gavel in between cuts. It's so strange.
Yeah, like, yeah. He does very, like, what he's able to do is what kind of literally what stalking victims feel like is happening, like that their eyes can be anywhere and that their hands are coming into their bedroom and their privacy sort of thing. So I thought that was an interesting way to approach it, of that is what they feel and he is actually doing that.
Yeah.
Speaking of practical effects too, the hands, those looked pretty really good. I was impressed. They didn't look like they're
the Addams Family.
Yeah, it's like,
yeah,
it's
but it was
like,
even better because it had like tendons coming off and stuff. Like, it was legitimately creepy, and I thought that that was a really good effect. But the eyeball was just like, ugh, you've got to be kidding me! It didn't even have detailing on it. I swear it was just like a round white ball with a pupil and a cornea. It didn't have like veins or anything. It was just, maybe it had like one, like, you know, whatever it's called, the nerve, the optic nerve, but it really felt like just so stupidly cheesy that I just laughed in that part when I should have been disturbed.
Yeah, I think, like, I mean, that was really creepy, but I think what Caitlin was saying is really important in the fact that that's what people are feeling, and though, although Angel put, like, you know, a physical body part, like a severed, albeit a severed body part, to that feeling, was really important. And I think the most important part was that they gave this person someone who believed them. It wasn't like, oh, this person's called 100 times and we questioned the guy and he got off. It's no big deal. Like, we're not going to pay attention to it. There were people there. There were people watching her. There were people who were believing her story. And I think that that was really important for this episode to focus on. It wasn't just Angel fighting the police to be like, no, I'm telling you, something is happening. This guy's watching her. And they're fighting back, being like, it's not important. We're not paying attention to it. But they were like, okay, we'll put someone on her. We can spare someone for 2 nights. We can do this. We can do that. And just giving her the chance to, like, you know, prove that this is going on, I thought was something we don't really see a lot in shows, even like SVU today. Like, sure, the cops are the so-called whatever heroes of SVU procedural, because otherwise why would we be watching the same cops week in and week out? But there's always someone who's like, they're making it up, or it's not that important, you know. And this episode didn't do that. They took what they had in the limited time that they had to do it in, and they really executed it well.
And I think it matters too that it's Kate that Angel goes to, so it's a female detective, and she immediately is like, stalking, okay, done, I'm on it, making sure this is taken care of. So it, you know, went to somebody who is sensitive to that, which was good. She never questioned it at all. She just said, okay, you know, taking care of it. Which I thought
she's starting to feel like a bit of a love interest toward Angel in this episode, from the fact that she takes, it seems like, a personal stake in helping him out here, and also that she sees that it's a woman being harassed and she wants to protect her and all that. But I feel like there were a couple of lines in this episode where Kate was like, either he or she were coming on to each other, and it feels like they're just going to kill her off to be like, see, you can't have Buffy no matter which form you try and have her. Get away from the blonde woman. And that makes me feel sad because I like Kate. I don't want her to go just because they're fitting her into the blonde white woman stereotype of this is what he wants in Buffy. It makes me sad. Do you see her? Do you see her dying soon, Brett?
No, I don't know if I see her dying, but maybe just I hope that she doesn't die, but I also kind of hope that she's not sticking around. Like, I like her as a resource and someone that you can, like, bring back a couple episodes from now and just be like, oh right, I forgot about Kate. But it's not someone that they're falling on all the time, and then they ruin the relationship with the police department because of a physical relationship or romantic with someone else. So I'm kind of hoping
they
kind of, like,
need the in.
Yeah, I'm hoping that it's more of a, exactly, like a professional relationship, to have that in, as opposed to, like, you know, someone, like, falling for each other or whatnot, and then we have, you know, the person we can always go to, like, if we need backup or what have you.
Yeah, and it'd be fine to me if she stayed just guest star, which is unfortunate for the actress because she does well, and I'd love to see more of her. And perhaps I'd even appreciate seeing her as a love interest, but I don't want her to become the love interest because that means she's either going to be killed off or have a breakup or just something. Like, it won't stay constant. And I think we really, really do need this in the police station, because if we don't, then this show starts to feel like Angel literally just flopping around and not having a single clue how to go about life.
So something else I wanted to touch on was, in terms of the stalking, was whether you noticed the comparisons or the parallels between the Doctor and Angelus, because we know that Angelus has a thing about stalking, very much a lot season two when he was stalking Buffy. We also know, you know, he tortured Drusilla into insanity, which implies some long-term issues there, potentially stalking. So that sort of seems like Angelus's MO. Thoughts?
Yeah, I'm happy you brought that up.
Yeah,
that
makes sense. I did not notice it, though.
Well, they talked about it real quick, because Cordelia goes, don't worry, he has a lot of experience on stalking because he's read up on it a lot.
I didn't know if that was a dig at, and I thought that was more of a dig at Angel, not Angelus, but now that, just because when I remember Angelus, it's like this, like, in-your-face type of, like, you know, super cool, really awesome, wonderful person, and when I think of
you were so twisted, oh my god, he strung one of those fish together.
And when I think of Angel, I think of more of a stalker.
That's silly Angelus.
But I do see the fact that Angel would recognize a piece of himself in the Doctor, be it a part of Angel or Angelus. That's something that he would want to tackle because it's something he's not really comfortable with. Like, he doesn't, while he does, like, enjoy living in darkness and the shadows, he also, like, you know, doesn't want that to be a person's MO. It's, like, really creepy, and he understands that he is a creepy person when he's like that.
Well, he did stalk Buffy.
No, I know. I know he did.
He saw her being called and all that. So you're right. Angel and Angelus both have experience in stalking if we're meant to separate their personalities to that degree.
And he realizes what stalking can be perceived as, which is horrible.
And I mean, he still stalked as, like, even when he met Buffy, he would still, like, I don't know. Like, remember when he stalked her in the alleyway in the pilot? Like, he's always been, like, around in weird ways, and she seems to kind of like it, which disturbs me, because she's like, oh, you're always just showing up when I need you. And to me, it's like, no, Buffy, that's not okay. You don't want someone stalking you, even if they're really cute.
I don't know if she necessarily, like, likes it. It's just more of a, like, oh, someone's actually looking out for me and interested in me for being the Slayer. It's not someone who's, like, just interested in me because I'm a pretty girl with blonde hair sort of deal. Like, they're accepting of who I am for what I am. I don't know if it's the stalking that really gets to her. Like, I'm sure she would really appreciate it if he came up to her in being like, I am Angel, I am here in this alleyway, here I come. And she'd be like, oh, okay, hey, Angel.
All right, so another issue, conflict going on in this episode is Cordelia and Doyle think that Angel really needs to start charging his clients because they can't afford to buy more coffee, which is pretty sad. And Angel is not having it. He is not interested in charging people for helping them, not really contemplating that, you know, they need to pay the rent and buy coffee, things like that. How did you feel? Like, did you take either one of their sides before we got some resolution at the end when Melissa, like, does bring them a check?
I mean, I was definitely on Cordelia and Doyle's side because, yes, this is a business that they're running. But in the end, Angel is sort of right. These people need him because they're his, like, Angel is their last resort. They can't go to, they're not comfortable going to the police, or they're not, their story isn't trusted anywhere else. And if this is the only option, he feels like he's taking advantage of them, and he doesn't want them to have another problem on their hands just because they sought help. So in that sense, it does make a lot of sense as to why Angel is uncomfortable taking money from anyone. And because he has this you know, I don't want to say hero complex, because I don't know necessarily if we can fully classify it as that. I don't feel like taking the time to figure that out. But he has this, like, you know, this feeling where he's being torn. Like, he's like, I need to redeem myself in order to perform all these actions, and this is my way of doing it. So he doesn't need anything in return, but yet there are other people who are relying on him at this point. So I'm torn. Like, I want to get Cordelia and Doyle their money, but I also think Angel's doing the right thing by helping these people free of charge.
Yeah, I'm totally team Doyle and Cordelia. Come on, you have to get paid. You're putting, like, your life at risk here. You're, like, jumping out of burning vans to kill pedophilia men and, like, just, like, a bunch of weird shit. Like, how are you surviving, Angel? Like, what are you, like, day to day, where do you get your money? Cordelia points out that you don't even have, like, you know, a 401k or whatever set up. Like, she's like, hello, Angel, you need to get your shit together, because Angel Investigations ain't gonna run itself, and neither will my Gucci fetish, so let's do this. And I'm with her. Like, she's putting hard work into this too, and she's also putting her life at risk.
Yeah, I think there's a difference between asking people that Angel, like, randomly is able to save for money, and then the people who actually come to them for the service. Because if you go to a PI, which is ostensibly what he is, you expect to pay money for the service. So I don't, like, and Melissa was, when Angel, like, uncomfortably brings it up, like, is not surprised at all. She's like, oh, right, you know, paying you, because I came to you, I hired you, of course you would want to be paid. So I think there's something to that. And I feel like Angel kind of in some way feels like, even if they get hired by a client, like, they're still the people who he's saving on the street that aren't asking, but they are actually asking. So mm-hmm. I feel like there's kind of a line there, and he's just not comfortable on either side of it. But I do think that they're completely right for people that they that hire them. They should absolutely get their money, and be, so they can continue doing their job.
Yeah. Like I said, like, I'm torn because I see Angel's point of view, but I also know that they need to keep a functioning business going, and that's the model that they're based on. And if you hire a private, like you were saying, if you hire a private investigator and they do their job, then you pay them. Like, it just, for some reason, it's David Boreanaz's stupid face that makes me feel like, okay, fine, you could do it for free. It's
fine. Also, when he changes his shirt for the meeting.
That is my favorite. That's my favorite scene, where she's like, you need to break out of this. And he just, like, shows up wearing, like, a beige sweater instead of a black sweater.
Change my shirt.
Were you amazed that he owned something?
Yes,
that
I was
wasn't
like, he
black?
Probably had to go out and steal that from someone.
Fine, maybe he borrowed it from Doyle, his side bae, because obviously Doyle really wants to get into Angel's coat.
Doyle as is obsessed with him. It's so great.
So is that a thing? Like, are we going to see this happen now, Angel?
I don't know. Angel and Spike here? Apparently did some things, so maybe Angel and Doyle.
Oh my God! Yes, that totally opens it up on the other end. Perfect, because it didn't feel like a gag to me.
It was really funny.
Yeah, I mean, I'm down for it, but I feel like it's going to be more still Angel Kate. Unless we have another love interest, because the show will not go on unless Angel has a love interest. It's not Cordelia, as much as I would like it to be. That would be legitimate. No. That would be cool. That would be fun.
Never.
No?
No. Angel and Cordelia, absolutely not.
I'm thinking back to their dumpster scene, honey. Like, way back when.
No.
That sold me on that ship.
No, I'm not feeling it. I'm not into it.
And she still wanted him at one point. Remember, she was really, really into him?
Yeah, but I don't... Not now. She's just there to get some money.
I wonder if Cordelia is just not going to have a love interest as well. Do you see where I'm coming to the point where I feel like Doyle and Angel's making more sense than Doyle and Cordelia, or even than Angel and Kate? Like it feels like these two characters, if Doyle's really not that super evil, could get together later. Because I know, like, Doyle's at least, like, 0.5% evil.
I'm not against shipping, but it's only episode 4, and I also think that shows can go on without romantic relationships at the moment. Like, Buffy, I'm so not into her having a boyfriend right now, and I'm also not into anyone on Angel having a romantic issue until they figure out the pacing of the show. So I just want to get there. I want to reach that point where I'm like, okay, now I'm done being concerned about how the show is going to be able to sustain itself. So right now, I'm totally fine with everybody being single and Angel being a little bit mopey. His personality's come back since Spike stopped by, so I'm good.
How are we feeling about kind of a case-of-the-week structure so far, four episodes in?
You know,
it's all right.
Yeah, I was thinking, we brought this up last week a bit, and even though last week was sort of an anomaly just because we had the crossoverness of the episode going, Selena brought up a good point by saying that you come to Angel for the cases and you go to Buffy for the characters. And I'm really seeing that right now. It's I was paraphrasing Selena's commentary, but that's sort of where my mind is at right now. Angel right now is establishing itself as like a show. Like, this is what we're doing. Sort of like how Buffy felt a little monster of the week in the beginning, and then it moved into more character-based. Like, I'm not watching to see what demon they're fighting. I'm watching to see what the demon reveals about the character. And right now, like, we're sort of dealing with the opposite. Like, what are the characters dealing with? Who are they in this new world? And by new world, I mean Los Angeles. And then, like, you know, how are they without other people supporting them? Or who are they because of the people who are supporting them in this episode? And we're not really getting that right now. We need a bit more push and pull, I think, with the case of the week. So I'm okay with it for now. I love a good procedural. Procedurals are like my favorite genre of television, which is not everybody's cup of tea, but I love it. I love a slow build of character story, and procedurals allow you to do that over many, many seasons because you only have like 20 minutes of, or not even, like probably like 10 minutes of character development over 40 minutes. So yeah, I am fine with it if it leads me to stronger characters in the end.
See, Britt, I find that to be a really interesting perspective, that you find the characters to be stronger from procedurals, because I find them to be weaker from the fact that they don't have the time to develop, as you're saying. Like, they only get 10 minutes in a 40-minute episode, and it starts to feel like their actual lives are made to be B-plot always.
I didn't say that they're strong, or maybe I did say they're stronger. I didn't mean that they're stronger. I like the fact that you only have a certain number of minutes with them, because I think the pull to them is stronger. I probably should have phrased it like that, because I want to know more about them, as opposed to like people who are like, here's 40 minutes of me dumping all of my issues on you as a character, and this is how I'm going to solve it, you know, like over a season, as opposed to like finding out little nuggets of information at a time. Maybe that's more clear.
Well, I think what it comes down to is that this show really needs more characters. It needs a larger cast to have us understand more about them and see them outside of their cases. Because right now, with just these three, it just feels like we can get done what we get done, and then we're just going to go home and relax at the end of the day. There's not really like a big drama going on. Like, think about like when in Buffy, a really intense episode, and it was a really great plot arc when Spike takes Willow and Xander hostage, then it's found out that they're cheating and Cordelia and Oz get upset. Like, all those characters come in to intersect there because they had time to build up to it. That's what I'm saying. I'm looking forward to an Angel. I'm looking forward to maybe not love triangles or squares, but I'm looking forward to seeing characters start to get upset with each other and not want to talk to each other. But you can't really do that so much with just three characters, because then it's like, we can't just like bring out these two characters on their own and leave this one off for the next five episodes because they don't like the other two. It's just strange.
Yeah, I mean, we're only on episode four. It feels weird trying to... That's something I just keep reminding myself of, because we've spent time with Cordelia and Angel before, so it feels like we're in, like, season five of their, like, own thing. But we're really only in episode four of what they're trying to do right now. So it's starting fresh with people you've known for three seasons. So it's a weird place to be in, and I feel like I'm placing too much pressure on Angel to be good right away. And it's not bad, which is... like, you know, surprising, because it could be four episodes of just awful exposition every episode, and it's not. They got it done in like a really humorous way by introducing Doyle being like, all right, here's everything you need to know about where Angel comes from. Okay, moving on. We're going forward now. And we're really starting, I think, with this episode to pave the way into Angel. So this is almost like episode one of what Angel will be, because last week we were still really connected to Buffy, especially because it was a crossover episode. But now, like, yeah. I feel like it's those two roads are really diverging because we're like, okay, he got rid of that ring. That was a connection to Buffy. That was sort of symbolic of, like, we are now separate shows. Yes, we'll probably come back together again at some point because we know just from knowing that there are crossovers to come. But, like, we're now clearly on the path of Angel and clearly on the path of Buffy, and we're just setting it up now.
Well, whatever way it goes, I think that I'm going to be happier watching this beginning of Angel if they get a little bit more down and dirty, and if they get more into, look at this transition, Caitlin, into this Wolfram, who's the Wolfram and Hart group, mm-hmm. because that would feel good, because they're done world building, essentially. They already have our main characters set up for us, except for Doyle. These Cordelia and Angel, we know so much about them by now. So it's really just up to Doyle to develop his character and to reveal his true evil self here so that we can finally get down and dirty with the big bad, I assume.
So are you so I take that you're expecting to have an overarching season plot at some point.
Well, and I wonder if my theoretical evil Doyle is involved with this law group. I don't know what their thing is, but I know that they're the big bad because they made that pretty apparent in the pilot.
And they were also in the previously on in this episode.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of where they would have fit in. Maybe they're like friends with the Doctor. When did they mention them in this episode?
They represented the lawyer or the Doctor. They said that they are so unethical that Johnny Cochran won't even join them.
And there were a lot of references to OJ in this episode.
Yeah. And that they had spun the whole stalking story to the point that they filed a restraining order against Melissa for the Doctor.
Hmm. Well, it makes me wonder if Melissa will come back, because she was a compelling actress, and I really liked her. So maybe she'll come back and she'll be taken hostage by Wolfram and Hart. And I'll be like, look, Angel, you don't do that again, right? You let us do our slimy, sleazy things and let us get away with it. But I don't see what their stock is in keeping that Doctor afloat. Maybe he was going to create like a super Frankenstein monster thing and they were like, yes, use your psychic surgery.
Or he paid them a lot of money.
Yeah. if he's so sought after, he would. That Doctor would have definitely had the money to do that.
I don't know. Actually, I do, but
I feel like this is even more blank than the mayor, because the mayor, like, at least we had like a face to the villain, and we could tell he was going to be the big bad from the beginning of season 3 of Buffy. But here, it's so blank. Like, if you compare it to even Buffy season 1, we knew the master from the pilot, done. But here, it's like, huh? Kind of Wolfram and Hart. Like, that's such a weird name to say. Like, I wish we had like a cuter name for them, like Wolfie's coming after you, like the big bad wolf or something. That would be nice.
You can call them whatever you want.
I think I just start calling them Wolfie. So we'll, the big
never
bad
stopped
wolf.
You before, Mitch.
Yeah.
I just can't remember Wolf from an Heart. It's so long. It's like, that was so much information I could fit up here, guys.
All right. Any final thoughts about this episode of Angel?
The only thing is that when the reveal happened, I really thought that I was so angry at the beginning of this episode because I kept saying, oh, he implanted something in her eye. That's how he can see her. That's totally the case. This show is so dumb. Why can't they figure this out? And I was like yelling at my tablet being like, guys, it's in her eye. Don't you see? She got eye surgery. He's totally watching her that way. And then it wasn't that. And I felt dumb. Just like my Jon Stewart thing.
And no one picked this as their favorite scene, so I'll bring it up that Cordelia's lack of coyness in her interview with the Doctor when she's making up a name for the organization she's interviewing from, and she's just like straight up just like, so he's really gross, right? That one doctor? And like, what kind of publication do you write from? It reminded me of when she was doing that in Earshot, trying to find the alleged master murderer.
Oh, by the way, it's for the yearbook.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, this is for the yearbook.
Yeah.
Are you planning on murdering anyone tomorrow?
All right. Favorite scene. So my favorite scene was the moment when Melissa stands up to Ronald and she basically tears him down. It's like, you know, you can't stand looking at yourself. You know, you can't get anybody. Like, she just has this moment of just she's had enough, and she just tears him down, and I thought it was awesome. Mitch, what about you?
Mine is when Angel attempts and fails at explaining that he's just here to help Melissa in the parking garage because he's like, oh, you look like you're in trouble. She's like, I'm good. He's like, yeah, but I can help you. She's like, really, though? And he's like, oh, so nice weather we're having. She's like, go away.
The thing I love and hate about the show at the same time is that it makes Angel so awkward because I love that it humanizes him, so to speak, but at the same time, like, awkwardness is my kryptonite and I cannot stand watching it, so I have such a complicated relationship with the show for that reason.
It's like uncomfortable to watch. They do a great job of presenting him in a way that shows like what a dope he can be,
but it's so good because you spend so long thinking he's like dark and brooding and serious, and then he's like so awkward.
Eric Hale, I'm telling you.
Brittany, what was your favorite scene?
Mine was when Angel changed his shirt into a beige shirt after Cordelia's check. So I wasn't expecting it. I thought it was just like a haha, yeah, you should change. But then they cut to the scene and he's wearing the beige shirt, and I was like, this is great. This is good. Angel is finally like becoming the Angel that people kept telling me he was.
And he actually has a shirt in that color, which is amazing. Favorite lines. So mine was, there were a bunch of great little one-liners in this episode. Mine was a little exchange between Cordelia and Angel, and Cordelia says, what is stalking nowadays? The third most popular sport among men? And Angel just immediately fourth after luge. Just like, I love their little quippiness. So good.
Shows a lot about Angel's personality too, which I appreciate.
I love when he's hilarious, but he's completely deadpan about it.
Yeah.
And he didn't even miss a beat when she said it. Just fourth after luge. Just done. I had the favorite line from a Buffy episode a while ago where he's like, I'm a funny guy. And you're like, ha ha. But he really is. Mitch, what was your favorite line?
My favorite line should come as no surprise to anyone because the official ship of Angel is Dangel, and it's at the end of the stinger or the teaser in the beginning when Doyle just looks at Angel flaunting away with his magnificent coat and he just goes, maybe I'm a little attracted. And I was like, ooh, the fanfic I will write.
I mean, who isn't Angel curious?
I'm Angel is curious.
Angel is his own sexuality. He forms his own sexuality amongst people.
Exactly. It's true.
That's Brittany, fine. That's all good.
Brittany, what was your favorite line?
Mine was, again, it was related to my favorite scene when Cordelia says, well, as vampires go, you're pretty cuddly. Maybe you might want to think about mixing up the black on black look.
And then he does.
Yep. And then he does.
So good. I love it. All right, so that wraps up our discussion of Buffy and Angel this week. So before we jump into listener feedback, just a reminder of how you can get in touch with us. You can email us at rewatchablepodcast@gmail.com. You can tweet us @re_watchable. You can comment on this post on hypeable.com. You can talk to us on Tumblr at rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. Or if you really love us, you can leave us an iTunes review. And Mitch just added my name to the incentive. Okay. And if you rate us 5 stars, then I will get you a birthday cake and make sure that the correct name is on it before it leaves the bakery.
That's great.
And for those of you in the South, I will get it from Publix, which you know means it's awesome.
Stop. I want like a really awesome birthday cake. I had ice cream cake for my birthday this year, just now. Just say, I know how to pick out a good cake, guys. You wouldn't get the wrong name from me.
All right, so listener feedback. We have a few tweets, some email, and a comment from Hypable. So our first tweet comes from Raven @lots_of_awesome. Says, in regards to the screen aspect of Buffy, I'm watching it on Hulu and it is widescreen. Maybe a bit grainy, but not bad. So I take it you guys were talking about aspect ratios.
We did. We talked about aspect ratios a lot.
So, I mean, I want to watch it on Hulu. You probably have to pay for Hulu Plus.
Probably.
Yeah, I'm trying to avoid that. it feels like it's becoming more and more difficult too.
Just watch it on Netflix. It's fine.
I'm so picky with my quality of my shows.
I am not. Rookbat 3 at Rookbat 3 Pern says, when Angel stepped into the sunlight, was anyone else half expecting him to sparkle a winky face? I was not, because, I mean...
Angel is so much better than Edward Cullen. Yeah. Hello.
I was expecting him to... I'm down for it.
I wasn't expecting him to do anything. I was expecting him to be, like, fine. Exactly like he was. I've also never... I've read Twilight, well, the first two, but I've never seen it. So I've never actually seen a sparkle of anyone.
Really?
Yeah,
It's just like you would imagine it. It's really not that spectacular. It's like, oh... It looks like just kind of like threw glitter over them haphazardly, and it's like, cool.
All right, and Mitch?
So then Gordon, how you doing, Gordon? Toonie Chopperman wrote, it's funny, but Harmony and Angel last week kind of drove home for me how miserable it must be to be a vampire, soul or no soul. And what's happening with Harmony now? She's in the mix. She's still around, moping around campus.
Harmony.
Take it from that sigh, she's going to do something I'm not going to like.
I mean, I was, when she came back in that episode, I was like, oh yeah, Harmony.
I'm down with Harmony, though. I like her. I really do. I feel for her. I'm with Gordon. I feel really bad for Harmony in particular, because she just, like, has to act on her animalistic tendencies of being a vampire, but she doesn't want to. She just wants to go to Paris.
Harmony. I don't know what else to say about Harmony, but just
Caitlin, we need a drum roll for this one.
Oh my god! I have to prepare for this one. Hang on,
I'm so excited. I'm so excited.
I don't know if I can do the voice for this long of a period. So we'll see.
Got it. We're rooting for you.
All right. This is from email. This is from Saley. I mean, it is actually from The Boulder. So I will read it. The Boulder is a fan of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, but has never seen Angel before. The Boulder was conflicted because he thought he would not like the spinoff, but the Boulder is over his conflicted feelings and has fallen in with Angel, the awkward turtle duck. With love, The Boulder. P.S. The Boulder thinks your podcast rocks.
Thank you, Boulder. Thank you for visiting us.
Oh.
That was so kind of you.
I'm so happy the Boulder came back. I've missed the Boulder so much.
Me too.
The Boulder has missed you too.
I'm sure you wish you could metal bend these days.
Oh, that's going to be my ringtone now. The Boulder has missed you.
Oh, that's good.
Leave a message for the Boulder. And there's your voicemail.
Yes, I'm
everyone's
gonna,
like super duper confused.
I'm never gonna
just
get a voicemail ever again because people are just gonna hang up. But it's going to be my voicemail.
Listen to our Avatar: The Last Airbender rewatchable episodes, and you'll get it. You have to feel it out with us, though.
The Boulder agrees. Mm-hmm. All right, Brittany, would you like to read the comment from Hypeable?
Sure. So Sarah commented, "I've always loved Angel's decision to destroy the one ring to rule them all. There truly are so many people, Angel could help at night that he wouldn't see in the light of day, both literally and metaphorically. And having that ring around is too much temptation. Think of it as Angel's Elder Wand." Wow, so many great references here. "He knows what that power would do to him, and he doesn't want to become that person. And guys, even if you don't think Angel is responsible for Angelus's crimes, and I totally agree, that doesn't mean that Angel hasn't done things he needs to atone for. He's lived a long time, and he's far from perfect." Did we see him in his awful Irish accent, like, creeping on people? He was not a pretty shiny snowflake. Angel does have some things to atone for.
I mean, in Lord of the Rings, even Gandalf doesn't want the ring because he's afraid of what the ring would do to him. And if Gandalf doesn't think he can handle the power of the ring, it makes sense that Angel wouldn't want that same power.
Nor does Dumbledore want. More accurately, I think the Deathly Hallows. I think he was fine with the Elder Wand. He was like, that's cool. But then when it came to like conquering death, he was like, uh-uh. Like, here you go, Draco. Bye.
Like, oh, this is cool. I'll just hang on to this for a little bit.
All right. So now we have Mitch's musings. I will turn it over to you, Mitch.
We already... Okay, so Buffy 405, Bear Bad. I don't know where this could go.
It's not beer. It's not bear bad.
Oh, I read it wrong. Okay, beer bad. Never mind.
It's beer bad.
Funny, no, I've been reading it correctly, beer, this whole week, and then I just wrote it bear, and I was like, wait, what?
It's because you wanted Buffy to fight the bear from The Revenant. I get it. I want that too, but it's not going to happen.
That'd be cool. I feel like Buffy's going to get a little bit wecker wasted, and she's going to do something she's going to regret. She might get together with Parker a little bit too soon and then confess her love for Angel to him. And then she'll be like, oh, my God, I'm never drinking again. So that's my Mitch's musing for beer bad. I don't think there's a supernatural involved. I think it's really just like Buffy crying it out in an alcoholic phase that she's having or something. Brittany, any brainstorms?
I actually like a little nugget of where your weird tangent went, and I think that the villain is not so much a supernatural being, but alcohol. That could be interesting to explore.
Yeah, like alcoholism is like the big bad in this episode.
Yeah, not even alcoholism, just like alcohol is bad, kids. Don't drink.
Okay. Yeah.
And then for Angel 105, I'm gonna pronounce it like it's spelled. Room of you. So room with of you. I didn't do the A, because it's spelled weird. So RMW/AVU. Is that meant to be like code? Am I supposed to understand like, oh my God, like Bruce Willis was a ghost the whole time? Like, what's here? I don't get what's going on here. Why is it Room with a View spelled like that, Brittany? Do you get this?
Yes, I think it is that Angel discovers texting and yeah. just decides to start texting or emailing, like you know, shorthand. Yeah, it's definitely going to have to do with technology at some sort. Like, because he's been like emailing and, you know, getting all techie because they've been using the computer a lot. And I think that it's going to have to do something with either email or text. I think it's still a little bit too early for texting, so probably email. Yeah. Or IMing. IMing. Or chat rooms. Cyber demon.
AIM. Hey.
Angel gets on AOL
instead of Cyber demon.
I really do. And I really do hope that his icon is like a screenshot of him and Buffy getting married in that one episode. Please do that.
Or like, he has like really bad like Counting Crows lyrics as his away message.
Or Evanescence, just
or
like
Evanescence, yeah.
Oh yeah.
Okay. That actually, anyone listening to this, tweet me your best Angel AIM away message because I just want to know them so badly.
I'm going to get this started
like,
with
the worst song lyrics possible. I just want to know what his away message would be. Bonus points if you can type it in caps, lowercase, caps, lowercase, caps, lowercase.
Ooh. Oh, it's going to be great. But you have to have like abbreviations too.
Oh, maybe. So that I can't even read it.
Yes. And it has to have like the A's are fours and the E's are threes.
All right, don't get too crazy because I really don't have a lot of time to spend doing that.
So yeah, Angel's gonna AOL instant message. That's totally what's gonna happen.
It's gonna be so good.
Who is down for that? Maybe he's gonna talk to like smart. What's that smarter bot? Remember that thing?
Oh yeah.
Maybe that'll clever come about. Bot. Yeah, like those are fun. Let's get into that, Angel. So wait. We have to think of like what's supernatural about this episode, though. Is it like we've already had like
demon.
So a cyber monster? Like we kind of already had that with like.
Yeah, but that was on Buffy. This is Angel.
Man
it's a whole new show.
Hello. Huh?
It's a whole new show. So they have to do it
so
again.
So we start over, like, we can press a reset button on monsters we've seen, and we can bring back, like, what was his name? Malcolm or something?
Yeah, something like that.
Maybe he's back. Maybe, like, they didn't vanquish him all the way. And
maybe Ted didn't die.
That's why they brought him up.
That's why they brought him up in Buffy, because he didn't die. He's coming back.
That would go down in history as like the one and only Buffy episode to set up like the rest of the show.
Yeah.
Like, everything that happened in that episode referenced everything else for every single episode after it.
There is nothing to say that can top that, so I think we're just going to sign off with that. So until next time, I'm Caitlin.
I'm Mitch.
I'm Brittany.
And I'm the boulder.
Yes.
Bye.
Bye. Mitch, you don't want to say goodbye? That's so sad.
Wait, did I say goodbye?
You did not. It's just rude.
It's Mitch. Fine. I said Mitch.
You said Mitch. Yeah, you didn't say goodbye, though.
You didn't say goodbye. Oh,
right. Well, goodbye, everyone. I was so shocked from the boulder.
There's a blooper for you. Yep.